Welcome to the Ute Talk Podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me today, as always,
Joseph Silverzweig. How's everybody doing?
Hopefully the answer is good.
Hopefully I left a little air for you all to tell me how you're doing. But what I want you to do is to send me a message and tell me what you think of the podcast. Maybe you rate it on iTunes or whatever. And if you don't like something, shoot us an email, shoot us a tweet, and we'll fix it. We are here to serve and please you, the listener. So let us know.
Let us know. UteTalk@gmail.com, @UteTalkPodcast on Twitter. Get us that feedback. We want to make you guys a good show that you enjoy listening to every week, as we will be doing this show weekly throughout the off season.
Every week. We do miss weeks sometimes until you guys start paying us, you know.
You know, if you really want to pay us our current salaries plus 3% every year, plus, you know, promotions every 2 to 3 years.
I'm pretty good at benefits over the AG's office. So healthcare, nice leadership track, that kind of stuff. So you guys let me know and I'll give you the address to send the check.
All right, well, let's tell them what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, so
we're going to do our quick hitters, talk about what's going on in the Olympic sports, give some Kuzma watch, of course.
Red Rocks got robbed. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, of course. And then we're going to get into the Chris Hill retirement, give our thoughts on that and his career of 31 years as the AD. And then, of course, we're going to talk some NIT. So it should be a fun show. We'll see how. Once again, give us the reviews, give us the feedback, let us know what you think. So first off, the Kyle Kuzma watch.
Kuzma. How you doing, Kyle? How's it going?
So Kyle's rocking it lately. I mean, his last game against the Pistons.
Oh, yeah, that looks good.
You know, playing against Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, 20 points, 11 boards. 2 threes, nice game. A matter of fact, 2 double-doubles back to back, beat the Grizzlies, 25 points, 10 boards. I mean, granted, those are two pretty abysmal teams, but then, you know, they played against the Pelicans and he had another 22 points and 5 boards, and some of that time was probably guarding Anthony Davis, otherwise known as AD. So, pretty good game. Games coming from him in these last three.
Wow, how many points in that game? Jeez. Tell me there was an overtime in that game.
Are you looking at
the game against the Pelicans was a 125-128 final. So there were some
to
shots
NBA with no defense
taken. Wow. Overtime. I was sure.
Kuzma hit 4 threes that night. So that was a good, good night for Kuz. So, you know, the season, you know, most teams have 8 or 9 games left in the season, maybe 7. It's pretty much over. Lakers are not making the playoffs. But, you know, very good first year in the NBA for Kuzma. Kuzma watch will continue the next week or two. If we're hanging back.
A little musical interlude here.
Yes.
I'm dancing. You can all dance with me. Oh, that's disappointing. I was really getting into it.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get video of that dance.
Nope. You had one chance and it's gone.
All right. Well, okay. So let's move on from Kuzma watch. Let's just quickly go over what's going on in the Olympic sports, and then we'll talk some gymnastics as that's become a hotter topic.
Hot under the collar. Topic.
So golf is in San Francisco. So that should be pretty nice for those guys. Softball, they're playing UCLA. Baseball's playing Oregon State. Track and field is going to be in San Francisco. They're going against actually San Francisco and then Stanford. Women's tennis is playing Washington State. And men's tennis is taking on Arizona. So there's your Olympic breakdown. April 7th, I believe it is the gymnastics region, the regionals. So that's coming up. But the Utes this last weekend, the Red Rocks took second in the Pac-12 championship, losing to UCLA by fractions of a point. So
the judging was all over the place. It's like balls and strikes, right? It's not the zone. It's do they call the same zone
consistent
for every person?
Yeah.
And they don't. I mean, this was a frustrating one to experience because it just wasn't the same. And some of that's a degree of difficulty issue.
Well, there is
the
some degree of difficulty,
some pretty challenging routines, and because of the max 10 scoring in college gymnastics, you don't get as much reward for doing harder things. You do better doing easy things well. Which I'd like to see change somehow. I mean, it doesn't have to be the whole time, but it'd be cool to see championships or regionals or something like that take on a different scoring model so that you could up... When the level of athlete was increased, the demands on those athletes was increased as well. That's as a system change I'd like to see in gymnastics.
Well, I mean, part of it for me... So UCLA's beam scores versus Utah's, I mean, the beam, even last year, watching UCLA perform it is crazy. They have wobbles, and somehow those wobbles mean nothing as far as deductions. But even on the floor, I think you don't even need to do something as drastic as a score change as much as how about you put, you know, the judges sit on one side of the floor, maybe at different ends, but maybe you put one on the opposite side. So you have a different viewing angle. The reason I say if they exclude the beam is because the beam, typically you have one judge on each side judging the beam. So how they're missing things and having, it just doesn't make sense.
It's like putting a ref behind the quarterback in football, you get a lot more holding calls, that same kind mm-hmm. of idea. They're just not physically in a position to actually see what's happening.
True, and I think the other thing here, and someone mentioned this on Twitter, I forget who it was, so I apologize, but it wasn't him. Okay. I don't remember who it was, but they wish they could see, like, rationalize the deductions, right? So they make a mark on that sheet of paper. They know when they're deducting for. So if that's what they're deducting for, that should be public knowledge. We should know.
There's no reason why we can't have a printout that says at 40 seconds in there was a wobble and I made this tick marker.
Right.
This element I gave this score because that's on the sheet. Each element has a possible score and they write what they give it and you can compare that to a video and actually test
and see
these
what
judges. And there's this sort of false screen that we've built and we've created this black box that we don't actually need, and that's encourages, in my view, inaccurate.
I will say this though.
Judging.
In the end, gymnastics for teams and what's moving the needle, I just have a feeling gymnastics scoring is not gonna get
our number one issue.
All this we're
everybody
talking
is
about,
tuning
not
in they're like
happen.
I want to talk about gymnastics scoring, and not only do I want to talk about it, I'm going to be beating down the door of the NC2A to make my feelings known. I know you're all doing it right now. You're writing your letters to the NCAA.
Is that how it works?
Gymnastics.
You're supposed to write the NCAA like senators?
Yeah, I think so. Right? There are worse ideas.
Who's your NCAA rep? Well, so needless to say, neither of us are totally happy with the result. But, you know, I don't care at this point. I'm hoping there'll be different, more consistent judging on the national level. We have regionals, which will be here in Salt Lake, so you get to go see the Red Rocks one more time in person, unless you're going to travel with the team. By all means, do that.
Awesome.
But hopefully they perform better there, or at least are scored more evenly, shall we say.
But on to the revenue sports while we're, you know,
talking about it.
Yeah.
So, big news out at the U. I believe it was announced pretty late in the night that there'd be an 11 o'clock press conference mm-hmm. that announced the retirement of Chris Hill.
The great, mighty 30 years of Chris Hill and an incredible amount of change in this program from, you know, kicking up mud on a basic back lot of a stadium. I mean, I know there's there's a lot of fond memories out there at the old stadium, but to where we are now is a remarkable period of change that he's overseeing. And I think you're crazy if you're not going to grade his tenure just an A.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are people on Twitter and whatnot nitpicking, or I'm sure
you're wrong.
BYU
wrong.
Fans don't like him for allowing
Larry
Kay
to cancel
it.
Did you see that? Somebody
it.
Found this really old comment on Des News. It was a BYU fan, said something like, "I was worried about Utah, but now that they've hired Urban Meyer, I know they're not going to make a hire that'll take that football program to the next level." And you just got to laugh. And
that
is from right after when he'll, so 2002. And then obviously trajectories have diverged since then. It's pretty hilarious. You find that on Twitter.
But I mean, people are going to nitpick, but otherwise, Chris Will, hey,
no, I
good
mean, you
job,
give
man.
A. Like, you can't be perfect in a business like
this. Of
course not. It's just impossible. And there were, I mean, that swimming scandal was a legitimate ding to his record, I think. But he handled it fairly well in the end, in the long run. And from a athletic competitiveness standpoint, just extraordinary results. So, I mean, thanks for all of this. I mean, it's really all this stuff we're doing now, the fact that we've got people listening to a podcast about Utah sports, it's all Chris Hill.
I don't know if I could say all, but he definitely
a lot
deserves
of it's Grant.
Kudos.
A lot of it's Grant.
Well,
Grant
no,
deserves
I was gonna say the student
the
athletes.
Of credit. Oh yes,
and
too.
The coaches.
Yeah.
But you know Chris,
but he's been the
kudos.
Architect of this new
yeah.
That is so much
he definitely
fun.
Deserves some credit, and he's clearly, you know, 30 years where it was to, you know, WAC, Mountain West, now Pac-12. He's obviously done a great job. And, I mean, just look at the coaches that are in place today. I mean, the baseball program's on its up, doing well, won a Pac-12 title. Gymnastics continues to do well. Softball did really well last year and continues to improve.
D1 lacrosse is
lacrosse
new
is
and
coming.
Successful. Hockey
yep.
is there's still like a couple
there's
divisions
some other ones
down,
that need some work,
but they're competitive.
But
they're
yeah,
they're
exactly
they're doing well
and,
in their
and then you look division. At the money makers, right? Your,
yep.
your basketball and football, of course, have done really well. So, I mean, I don't know that there's a ton to say, but hey, thanks, Chris Hill. You've done a great job. I'm kind of sorry to see him go. I mean, heck, I wish I could retire. But the next question is, who's going to replace him? I feel bad for that person, honestly.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting. Whittingham did an interview, and he kind of made a little bit of a plug for a deputy or associate. I don't know what the title is, but a second-in-command under
mm-hmm.
Chris Hill. He mentioned somebody by a name who I assume is the sort of acting AD. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see. If they stay in-house, I don't think much changes. But I wonder if they go out and they get an outsider who maybe is going to want to make a mark, maybe shake things up. And I wonder a little bit about Larry Kay. I know there's sort of ongoing rumblings, and next year has been treated as a, you know, put up or shut up kind of year for him because he's got a really good class and a really good infrastructure, and you put those two things together and you should have a good tourney run.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that.
That's interesting.
The person I think you're thinking of is Kyle Brennan, who
yes, that's
people are saying is the front runner. And, you know, he was the number two guy, left for Montana, decided to come back. So it'll be interesting to see whether he gets the job. I don't know. I mean, he's supposedly the front runner. I don't know Mr. Brennan very much or more of the background than I've repeated right here. Either way, big shoes to fill, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So, let's talk some basketball, shall we?
NIT, man, it has been fun, and I want to thank kind of Ute Nation for being willing, for the most part, and I think the majority, to like get into it and have fun, and you know,
Well, I think
pay attention. I don't know how many people are watching the games, but you know what's going on, and you're paying attention. And the quality, the product that they're putting out there is good. I mean, that Western Kentucky game was fun. It was a fun one to watch.
It was, and I think most fans were, it's a bummer, not the NCAA, it's the NIT. Then you start watching the UC Davis game, and it was a rough game to watch. And then, you know, Larry Kay gets tossed, and next
that's
you know
really,
it.
That's the story right there.
That's kind of the turning point.
They went, oh, yeah, we're still playing basketball. We can still win. Because a lot of the NIT is about who actually wants to be there. And
it
at
is.
A certain point, sometimes right in the middle of the game, like with USC, when they lost to Western Kentucky, you see them go, oh, this is just hard, and I'm tired, and I want to go home, and there's a beach back there, and I'm going to go surfing. I mean, you know, it's USC.
Mm-hmm.
They got stuff to do. And here in Utah, it'd be easy to say, oh, man, did you hear about that powder? I'm going to go, you know, carve a few turns, but they haven't, and I think that Coach K, epic meltdown. If you haven't seen it yet, find the video. It's good. It was exactly what the team needed at exactly that moment. I don't know how calculated it was, but it was beautiful. And since then, they have been playing
lights out.
Yeah,
good basketball. I mean, we can talk about it. So, like, I mean, last night, obviously, they played in the semifinal against Western Kentucky. A good team. Beat USC, as you said. They beat Oklahoma State.
Tournament-quality team.
Totally.
But for the
very good team.
Cookie crumbling a certain way would have been.
They have some really good athleticism. I mean, Dustin Johnson, you've all heard his name. We watched the game yesterday. Kid's good. I mean, good team. The Utes just came out on top. And what was interesting was, you know, listening to some of the post-game, Rawson, he said he felt like the first little bit, those eight turnovers in the first, like the first quarter, second quarter, was a lot of nerves. And, you know, once they settled down, they were really able to, you know, get that lead back late in the first half and are tied up. And it was a whole new ball game, and they kind of settled in. I mean, it's interesting to see senior leadership came through last night. You had Rawson. I mean, let's just start. So Colette, you know, took that charge, made sure to step right outside of the restricted line, took the charge that was a game changer itself. Then the next, what maybe it wasn't the next defensive trip. I'm mixing it all together, honestly. But then Bibbins draws a charge on Dreerden, their guard, and causes another turnover. And then Bibbins driving to the hoop, finds Rawson for that open three, and I mean, that's all out of order. I'm not sure what order it was.
I think you got
time.
It right. I think there were
but,
the two fouls, and then the Rawson three for the lead, and that.
And that sealed it. It was pretty much
was
over
good.
At that point. I mean, so
and
props to the Utes.
Let's
to
take
the
a minute, because one of us has been team Tyler Rawson fairly consistently through the season. And one of us, less team Tyler Rawson. So I think there's a little air here for a mea culpa.
Oh, go ahead, apologize.
No, I don't need to apologize. I have been trumpeting Tyler Rawson, and in particular, Coach K's ability to develop big men and to get a guy like Rawson to be a different player in March than he is in January. And I think that's what you've seen with him. Since the Pac-12 tournament started, Rawson is a little over eight rebounds, a little over 11 points. He's hitting threes. Grant and I had a little pre-recording discussion about his professional future. I think we both agree he's probably a little undersized for the stretch four role in the NBA. But the way that he's performed, he has, I think, real potential as a G League or international player, at least in the near term few years.
I mean, I want to give him credit and the coaching staff credit. I mean, looking at the way he played last year versus this year is night and day.
It's amazing.
I mean, his decision-making, his passing, the outside shooting, all of that has really changed this year. And so coming in this year, seeing that he was starting games, of course, I mean, and along with a lot of the Utah fan base, we're disappointed that that's what it is. Yet now we are here at the end. Hindsight's 2020, of course, and you could say, well, that was the right call. I mean, Rossen has been solid all year, and you know, late in the season, he's really picked it up, and especially in this tournament, his dude is clutch. He's been hitting big threes, carrying this team at times when needed, and it's very impressive. I mean, Collette, he was something we bagged on throughout the season of his inconsistency, and then late in the year, he just really turned it on. He's really that anchor in the post that when you need a score, as much as we have Bibbins and Bearfield, but you know, when the guards aren't hitting, you know, you can pass it down to Collette and he's going to get you a bucket and stem or slow the flow or however you want to say it.
And I was saying pregame in my article for Rivals that the big advantage Utah had in this game was size. They don't have anybody over 6'9", so I think having big guys who could really kind of muscle in there and hold down the paint created problems for them. And I think you saw that with the late fouls in particular. There wasn't a way in without that the risk of fouling.
So, you know, awesome win. Very fun game to watch. But now they got to play Penn State in the final tomorrow. And I want to set expectations. I don't know if the Utes are winning that game. One, Penn State is rolling. If you watched them, they crushed Mississippi State. That was a non-game. And if you noticed, this is pretty much home court advantage for them. That Madison Square Garden was jam-packed.
Yeah, but people live in the same city Penn State is in and commute to work in New York. They take a train to New York every day. So it's gonna be
a road game Penn for State.
And then from a nerdy data perspective, the suggestion is that home field or home court tends to be relative to mileage and has something to do with the sort of psychological aspect of playing close to home. So Utah's long travel distance is relevant. And I think echoes that crowd advantage. I'm not quite where you are on it. I mean, Utah's beaten some darn good teams, similar to Penn State over the last couple of games here. St. Mary's, that was at a home, and that's a really good team. Just maybe not as good as Penn State in the aggregate, but in that neighborhood.
But Madison Square Garden versus the high school gym, St. Mary's
place. That gym
different.
Is pretty lame.
3,500 versus, what is it? I don't even know what the Madison
MSG sell out,
is.
They sell out MSG for something like this. It's a crowd.
Well, it didn't look like it was sold out last night. So
but the
I wouldn't say they're going to sell
more.
There's going to be more than 3,500 people there.
Especially with the Penn State.
Yeah.
But like I was saying, my feeling on the home court, that's got less to do with the crowd and the energy than it does with sort of a physical proximity and weird instinctual stuff about, you know, what hormones flow most readily when you're close to home versus when you're far away and you feel like you're in enemy territory in the same way that, you know, an animal in the neighboring tiger's territory would feel different. And that's what the research suggests. It's got more to do with that than with crowd energy.
Right.
So it's interesting and an interesting area of sort of study and research for me. But
outside of the stats, which I'm sure you're going to give us some, but I want to give this thing, as much as I think, you know, I'll give you my pick to some extent. I think Penn State's going to win it. But we kind of, matchup wise, I'm looking at it, you know, they have their guards that are really good guards that are scoring in Carr and Gardner. Both of them had 21 and 18 against Mississippi State. So, you know, that's a good guard combo. We have Bearfield and Bibbins, so it'll be interesting to see how they go back and forth. And then they have their big, their forward, who contributed 17, that Colette and Rossin are going to have their hands full with him. But what's interesting watching their, what it looks like is it's those three guys. If you can shut those three guys down, you're going to be looking at a really good situation to win a game.
Yeah, it's not a deep team. The good ones are good, but the rest of them are just okay. And I would say Utah's probably more balanced in terms of talent. Maybe a little less talent overall, but you know, the starting five.
It's more of a team.
Yeah. And there's more advantage. There's advantages to exploit, even though there are problems too. It's not, you know, all the way down the roster, we don't have anybody better than them. We do. And it's going to be interesting. But hey, only two teams get to finish their season with a win in basketball. So it's
I'm hearing that a lot lately.
It's a cool opportunity. And I think winning the NIT is a heck of a lot better than losing one of those last first four games.
I think there's a lot more excitement. I will say this, you know, one thing I'm concerned about for next year is leadership. We're losing Rossin, we're losing Bibbins, we're losing Colette. I mean,
how much of
we're losing Beeler.
How much of a blow to lose Bibbins, a guy like Bibbins, a great player like that, after only 1 year? It's really hard.
It's hard to see.
Dynamic.
Yeah, well, and it's not only what he does on the floor, it's
right.
His toughness, the leadership. All those things, like, we're losing that. Rossin's leadership.
He's a huge part
Colette,
of the character,
I mean,
of this.
Yeah,
team.
Like, that's what my main concern is for next year. We're going to have a talented team. There's a lot of young talent coming in. The coaching staff's, for the most part, from what I know, is going to come back. And it should be a good year. However, we are replacing four seniors who have contributed in a lot of ways to this team, and we're losing that.
Yep.
We're losing Bibbins, Colette, Rossin. Those three right there, it's like those are pretty crushing blows in my opinion. And as much as the incoming talent is supposed to be really good and we can have high expectations of this team, there's that it factor toughness that we like as Utah fans. And will this team next year have it?
Penn State coach says, oh, Utah, nobody wants to play Utah. And that's so much a part of the team identity and the whole university identity, the fan identity, this idea that if you step on a court or a mat or in a pool or on a field, you're going to feel it the next day. And that's fun. And I don't know where that comes from next year. I mean, I assume to an extent it comes from Larry Kay, who is a tough MFing dude.
Well,
but
as I think about it, you're right. Part of it is totally coming from Larry Kay. I think the other guy that I really think of that has that it toughness that I see is either going to be, it's got to be these two is what I think it's going to be. Bearfield. I guess Jace Johnson's probably going to have a load of it. And then Donnie Tillman, though. I think it's Bearfield and
Tillman. Tillman, if Tillman can play like that, can play with that edge and toughness, I think sky's the limit for the team because the talent is so good. But if Bearfield winds up leading the team, they'll be good. But if Tillman is able to take that mantle and the star player mantle that he's going to have to take and the point scorer and the kind of offense running through him that I think he's probably going to wind up in and do all of that, it's going to be a really special team.
I mean, ultimately, that's kind of the thing, right? We've got Bearfield's coming back. I feel like we know who Bearfield
and
is.
Yeah, right. He's a brawler. He can absolutely take that role. But if Tillman would do it instead or also, that would
it's
be
gotta
so
be
much
also.
Better.
It can't
yeah.
be instead.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think he's definitely got the ceiling to accomplish that. Whether he does or not is a whole other ballgame. But it should be exciting. Ultimately, all these guys that are on this team that are not the seniors are getting some great experience. They're playing in the NIT. They've been playing in some close games with the St. Mary's game in Western Kentucky. They're getting to play in a big environment like Madison Square Garden. I mean, this is some really
right.
good experience.
The NIT as a whole isn't comparable to the tourney, but I think these games against Western Kentucky and against Penn State tomorrow, it's a big, it feels that's a big deal. And that experience is going to translate comfortably, I think, to playing in
the NCAA next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Playing in, you know, regional tournament, wherever it is.
I mean, next year could be a big year for Utah sports.
I'm too excited. I'm like revved up. My numbers for Utah football are really good. And it's all very exciting, and I'm kind of trying to tamp down
expectations.
And I think that's part of why maybe spring football hasn't had the same buzz, because everybody's like, this might be good. Let's all stay calm. Let's all relax, because maybe it won't be. I don't want to get too hyped up, but, man, I'm pretty hyped up.
It's time for the manage your expectations public service announcement. Make sure and control those. We don't need to be asking for Whittingham or Larry Kay to be fired after what are going to be good years next year when they don't end exactly like we want them. So let's just manage the expectations.
Second in the South and 9-3 and win a Cotton Bowl. That's good. That's a good year, and you shouldn't be disappointed because in your head you were thinking, oh, what if we beat Alabama again for the championship, you know?
We cannot be the fans from Team Down South that
right?
are expecting national
title every
year.
The trick is set your expectations and don't change them.
Exactly.
If you let your expectations grow every time Huntley throws a touchdown or Tillman – slams down dunk, you're gonna be disappointed because the lows will come just like the highs do.
Well, look, guys, we need feedback. We need reviews. We need some emails or some DMs on Twitter. Let us know how we're doing, what we can do better, and even more so, what you want to hear about during the off season. We're gonna be, basketball off season's officially gonna hit as of Friday. Spring football's
coming to an end.
It's going to end here. So we're going to need some coverage things. What do you want to hear us talk about? We've got some plans in the works, and we're going to get some good stuff for you, but we'd love to hear your ideas too. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.